Correspondences is an anthology of writings with the expressed purpose of calling for an end to direct provision. It's edited by Stephen Ray and Jessica Traynor, but the contributors are a cross-section of writers who have in the past or are currently living in direct provision in Ireland. Each piece written by a direct provision resident is responded to by an established Irish writer. Joining me from Cork is Rehan Ali. Marwa Zamir is in Ballyhaunis, and here in studio with me in Dublin, Claire Hennessy, who responded to Marwa's piece, and one of the editors of Correspondences, Jessica Traynor. Jessica, this started out, there were kind of two prongs to how it started for you, I think, but one was a conversation with your father around his experience of not being in the Artane Industrial School, but his own attitude to Artane Industrial School. He grew up in Finglas. Tell me about that.
Well, I had one of those conversations around the Sunday dinner table conversations where I said to my dad, well, what was known about what went on? What was talked about? What was whispered about? And, you know, he said that there was this great sense of fear, a great sense that it was a terrible place to end up, and that the threat heard in every street corner, if you don't behave, you'll be sent to Artane.
And just to put a kind of time frame on this, I suppose your father would have been growing up in Finglas, what, in the 60s?
Early 60s.
Early 60s,
yeah,
right.
Yeah. So, I mean, there was a sense in Dublin, and I'm sure elsewhere around the country, that there was something not right about the way this was, or something to fear at any rate. And I kind of thought to myself, well, in the future, what might my children ask me about in terms of what was hidden in our society, what was ignored, what was allowed to continue, even if people had an inkling that there was something not right. And of course, the system of direct provision was one of the things that came to mind.
And then the second prong of what kind of set you in the direction of putting together this anthology with Stephen Ray was a series of lectures that Field Day organised.
Yes, it was the Right to Have Rights lecture series in 2017, which went around the country and looked at a number of different topics, but focused particularly on direct provision. And Stephen asked me to read some of my work that responded to direct provision alongside a number of activists and writers who are currently in direct provision. And the two of us got to chatting afterwards. And it's a subject that we, you know, he was very passionate about. I was becoming more aware of. And we kind of thought, well, what can we as artists do in order to try and just keep the conversation going?
Yeah. So and then you come up with this idea of pairing a writer who had spent time or was currently in, is currently in direct provision in here in Ireland, with an established Irish writer.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing that we did was we went to people who were working in the field, lots of different activists, people like the people involved in Massey, who are the beneficiaries of the anthology.
Massey being the movement of asylum seekers in Ireland.
Yes, yeah, the only charity run in the area by and for people in direct provision. But also people like Mulatu Ukena Okori, whose book This Hostile Life was published by Skene Press, activists like Sarah Clancy, the poet, who's been really active. And we tried to figure out what might be useful and also to identify what are the problems for people in the system. And one of the huge issues is isolation, geographical and social isolation, and the fact that people in these centres don't get to integrate into Irish society.
Well, let's hear that from one of the horse's mouths, as it were. Let me go to Rehan Ali. Rehan is in our Cork studio this evening. And in fact, the very thing that Jessica mentioned there was one of the sentences that jumped out to me from very early on, Rehan, when you were talking about another boring day in Bridgewater House, which was the particular hostel that you were in Carrick-on-Shore. That isolation that Jessica mentioned there, and that kind of sense of what do I do? Did you experience that a lot in your time in Bridgewater House?
Yes, good evening. Yes, I most certainly did. I spent 10 and a half years in Bridgewater House, the span of my childhood.
Yeah, you came here, you left Pakistan with your family. You were 6 at the time.
That's correct. Yes, I was. And I left when I was 16. So I spent a lot of days in Bridgewater House, and at a point it does become very repetitive and everything starts to merge together. And most certainly I had boring days after boring days, and it turned into this endless stream of disdain and misery. But one thing I always do like to highlight, because perhaps it could be recreated and inspired other peoples to do the same thing, is a sense of community. I consider myself, although I did spend 10 and a half years in direct provision, I still consider myself to be one of the lucky ones, and some people might question that. But why I do consider myself to be somewhat lucky is because of the fact that I was surrounded by such an accepting and loving community. I was so fortunate that if I was going to spend 10 and a half years in direct provision, I spent them in Carrick on Shore in Tipperary.
And when you're talking about community in that case, Rihan, are you speaking about those who are living in the direct provision centre with you, or are you talking about a broader community?
A broader community. Not that, of course, the individuals also residing in Bridgewater House weren't incredible. They were. I was surrounded by so many different cultures, and that really has made me into the person that I am, as open-minded and progressive as I am, but also the broader community, from the Tudor Artists and Hub, an arts collective in Carrick on Shore, to Feroiga, the youth club. Everyone was so accepting and really supportive of me as an individual involved in arts and culture, as a writer, as a filmmaker. They were so involved in my development that it really did help make even the worst of days manageable.
And did you attend a primary school and secondary school in Carrick on Shore itself with those people who were born and bred in Carrick on Shore?
Yes, I did. I had incredible friends. In fact, thank you for bringing that up, because just this Monday, I actually was invited back to my secondary school to do a reading for my book and give a talk to the students about life in direct provision, along with me being now a writer and talking about writing. So I got to meet my old teachers who inspired me to be who I am right now and who did accept me as I was. And because of that, I have now achieved what I have achieved. So I got to go back and I got to share my success with them. And that was a beautiful thing. And it greatly highlights what can happen when you reach out, when a community reaches out. And for so many people in direct provision, they don't have that. Yeah. They are isolated.
Well,
so
let's ask Marwa Zamir, who's joining us from Ballyhaun, is what her situation is. Now, Rihan told us there about being in direct provision for 10 and a half years. You're not in Ireland quite that long at all yet, Marwa. First of all, when did you come to Ireland and where did you come from?
Hi, good evening.
Hi.
I'm from Afghanistan, so I moved from Afghanistan 3 years ago, and I'm in direct provision from last 2 years.
For the last 2 years, and you're in direct provision in Ballyhaunas. The sort of community experience that Rihan was speaking about there, do you have a similar experience with the community of Ballyhaunas?
Yeah, I have the similar. What helped me in feel included was Feroiga.
Feroiga again, yeah?
Yeah. Well, Ballyhaunas is very mixed town. It's a small town, but you find many people from like other nationalities. So that really helped me, and a lot of friends support me, family friends. Feroiga really helped me. I met a lot of new friends, and even the leaders there, they really support me, Sharon and Laura. They're still supporting me.
And you're in fifth year in school in Ballyhaunas. What are your plans as you go through secondary school? Do you already have an image or an idea of where you might want to head?
Oh yes, of course I have. Well, first I want to go to university and study law, and then work at UN, become an activist.
Great. Okay, so you quite definitely have plans. If you wouldn't mind, Marwa, what I'd like you to do is to read a little section from your piece in the book. And your piece is called "In Kabul, I Was Busy Playing." And that kind of tells us, that gives us a sense of what exactly was your situation in Kabul. What age were you when this event that you're about to read a section of, what age were you when that happened?
I was 9.
You were 9. So,
yeah.
Well, let's hear a section. This is a little part from In Kabul, I Was Playing. It's a little bit into it, but I think it's self-explanatory as to what was and it was happening on the street as you were playing. So maybe you'd read from that for us now.
Okay. The windows were shattered. I heard people screaming, asking for help. I heard a man yelling so loud, crying "Komak," which means help in Farsi. My mom came and said, "Run, go inside." The kids were crying. They were so scared. They were shaking. Even I was. My grandma made lemon juice for the kids to stop them crying. 30 minutes later, Mom said, "Let's go home before anything worse happens." So while walking back, the streets were full of policemen, the Afghan Force Army and American soldiers with big, big tanks. I saw dead bodies laying on the street. Mom said, "Just close your eyes, hold my hand and keep walking." 2 minutes later, Mom said we could open our eyes again. We saw a few people cleaning something disgusting like blood, carbs, bird in their clothes, and burnt iron parts. Women were trying to get closer to the scene of the accident, but the police were not letting them. They kept begging, "Please let me go, my husband is there." They were crying out so loud that the police let them approach. I was not crying, I don't know why, I was just staring at the crowd. There was not a single taxi to be found. 20 minutes later, a taxi appeared. We took it and the taxi driver said, "I will charge you a double fare." My mom replied, "Just go." People did in the street and the taxi driver was thinking about his business. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Marwa. That's Marwa Zamir reading from her piece, "In Kabul I Was Busy Playing," which is part of Correspondences, an anthology to call for an end to direct provision. And Marwa is joining us from Ballyhaunas. We've also been speaking with Rehan Ali in Cork, and with me here in Dublin, Claire Hennessy and Jessica Traynor. Jessica was co-editor of the piece. Claire, you responded to Marwa's piece.
I read it
today, and I have to say, I don't know how I could have responded to it. I'm not even ready to respond to it after a second or a third read.
Absolutely. Well, one of the sort of important parts of kind of working on this anthology was that it wasn't just a case of, you know, sort of like reading through somebody's piece and then sort of going like, right, let me have some thoughts on it. So one of the things that I think Jessica was very kind of conscious of as an editor was making sure that there was also some small amount of kind of editorial feedback between the pairing, so that I would have, when I was kind of told, you know, okay, so we've got like a 15-year-old who, you know, has this kind of piece, would you be willing to work with her on it to sort of improve and develop it? I kind of sort of prepared myself for something that was going to really need a lot of work, that was something that was maybe going to be quite a struggle. And actually, the first time I read it, it just blew me away. And we did very kind of little sort of work on it. It was really just bringing out sort of Marwa's voice even more than what was already there. And I mean, I think you get a sense from that, you know, the sort of the amazing kind of details that she has in there, it's unsentimental, but it is also it's absolutely unflinching, you know. And like, I read it and I thought, that is a writer, that is a really talented writer, which is obviously a hugely important skill for activism and for law. So yeah, I mean, Jesus, like, whoa, my heart.
I know.
You know?
Am I right in thinking that predominantly up until now, the contact has been by email?
It has been by email.
Is this your
email.
First time speaking to each other?
This is. It's amazing. It's so surreal. it's so surreal that it's happening on the radio.
Well, Marwa, maybe you could tell me about some of the feedback then that you got by email from Claire and what that meant to you in terms of how you worked on the piece.
Well, I didn't know about the poem when I went on the launch. I got the book from Jessica and I opened my piece and I was very happy.
Yeah.
And when I turned the page, I saw the poem and I was shocked. Natasha, my family friend, was beside me and I was like, "Oh, Natasha, look at this. I want to meet her and tell her how much I appreciate it." But she couldn't make the launch, so I emailed her saying how much she made me happy and feel special. Yeah, she did a great job.
Right. Well, listen, Marwa is speaking there about your poem, which is on the next page over, Claire. So why don't we hear what your response to the piece was, which is, it's simply called For Marwa.
For Marwa. Yeah. I was like, no, this is just, let's just get to the point of this. Okay. So this is For Marwa. And it is lovely to actually just be able to read this to you in person. Marwa, when I read your piece, I get tears in my eyes. Not sad. Angry. Your talent is a flame and I am allegedly here to help it. But honestly, all I can do is cheer you on because you are already doing it. Putting the words together, making the magic, crafting things that will make a reader breathless. And you do not need my permission or encouragement to do what you do. But for those flickers of doubt, please have it anyway, this permission slip. Because a world where your song goes unheard will be lesser. For whatever it's worth, here's the right to keep being perfectly, beautifully you.
Claire Hennessy with For Marwa. Yeah. Tears in your eyes as you read the piece and as you read the piece. And I think you won't be alone on that one, Claire.
Absolutely.
And I think, Marwa, Claire probably speaks for a lot of people when she says there about, you know, just be yourself, be beautifully yourself. Two things struck me, several things struck me in your piece, not least of which was the sentence that you have towards the end of the bit you read for us. I was not crying. I did not know why. I was just staring at the crowd. What was that? Was there a numbness? What did you feel at that moment? Do you know, was it a numbness? Could you just simply not respond to what you were seeing in front of you on the streets of Kabul?
Well, for me, I was shocked what happened, because an hour before that, everything was perfect. We were playing outside, and then this happened, and I didn't know how to react. I was just holding mom's hand, and she was like, just close your eyes, don't see whatever is on the street. So I don't really remember, but whatever I remembered, I wrote in the piece.
Yeah, because you were nine. You told me when the bomb the bombing happened on the streets, and here it was 15. You were 15. 6 years later, when you wrote down.
I'm 16 now.
Yeah, and it was, you were 15 when you wrote this piece. I think, is that right?
Yes. Yeah.
So you know, you had 6 years, and still the details were there. The precise details of what you could see, and that story about the taxi driver itself. What did writing the piece mean for you?
Well, I love writing, and writing about this experience, I really enjoyed it, and it was a great experience. It meant a lot. It is my past, so, yeah.
And how would you describe your present in Ballyhaunas, in the centre there?
I think I'm very lucky, because I got my status now, so...
You've got which? Your status.
So, Ballyhaunas is an amazing town. I have lots of family, friends, supporters, my mom beside me, so it is good now. Mm. And the most important one, safety.
You feel safe, is that? That's the most, that's the overriding emotion for you?
Yeah.
Let me go back then to Rehan Ali in Cork. What's in the Name is the title of your piece, Rehan. Maybe you could read a little section of that for us, just a short section for us, and tell us what you were exploring through the piece.
Certainly. I'll start by speaking about my mother. She wanted to give us the open sky and unfolded sea, to blaze a trail so we could succeed. The mail that had been left for her had different intentions. I had seen it earlier by her bedside, brown and large. I've always known, I guess, that there was something to be feared. I can feel it coming. Although my eyes are shut tight by the force of childhood, I can still sense it. Yes, it's here. And much like the weather, she couldn't quite keep it together. She's been losing sleep, and I've been keeping myself awake. I can sense her thoughts. Can I make it before I lose my mind? Who chooses what stays and what fades away? We need a revelation. It's time to pray. The old remedy. But it's a prayer I can't complete tonight. Where do we go now? Self-serving prayers only go so far. So there I'm basically talking about what I would imagine a lot of children feel, which is, because you're a child, you can't really share the burden of your mother. And everything you experience is through your mother. You know, when she's happy, you're happy. When she's sad, you're sad. You know, I didn't fully understand our situation, but I could only pick up on it through the reactions of my mother. And, you know, it's the story of mothers, all the mothers in direct provision, which is, all they want is for their children to have a better future, to be able to give them the opportunities that they were bereft of. A lot of mothers have that same experience, so it's not necessarily only about my mother, it goes out to all the mothers in direct provision. You know, my mother was so incredibly generous, so incredibly kind, that she gave up so many of her years fighting for us. So I could never repay that, and I'm forever grateful for it.
And the specifics there, again, you mentioned 10 and a half years before you spent in direct provision, Rehan. So the specifics of what you're remembering in that piece, the specifics of an envelope arriving, can you fill me in a little bit more of the detail of what that was?
From my memory, it was just, I think it was fearful in terms of, are we not allowed to stay anymore? It was perhaps was it a message that was sent to my mother saying that we were no longer allowed to stay in the country? Because when I was a child, that's what I imagined it being, from the things I had heard around the hostel, is, they've gotten this mail And now they're no longer allowed to stay in this country anymore. They're going to be sent out of the hostel and be sent back. So that was what I was imagining in my head at that age. So yeah, that's what that's about.
So, in fact, the arrival of any kind of official document, like a big brown envelope,
exactly,
was always a moment of fear, a moment of anxiety.
Exactly. By your bedside, wondering if you should open it or not because you're afraid of what's in it, because your faith is sealed within it. So that's what it was about. And when we're talking about writing, of course, writing was an escape for me, as I'm sure it was for Mara as well. It's incredibly important, and why this book is so incredibly important is it incorporates both this art form that many of us use as an escape, but also gives us a voice to be able to share with those who don't fully understand direct provision or our journeys and our experiences. So we can use this art form that not only do we love, but we can use it to benefit everybody so we can share these experiences. So I'm incredibly grateful to Jessica Trainor and Stephen Ray for this opportunity.
And Ian, well, actually, let me ask Mara about what writing is for her. Rehan speaking there about having almost a dual purpose. First of all, a kind of a release, but also getting your voice out there. What purpose does it serve for you, if any, Mara?
I think for me, it means people know how some people live in a war country, to know their situations, and I think that's the main reason for me, I say.
Okay. Well, listen, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking to both of you this evening. But before we finish up, I want to ask Jessica Trainor a couple of questions. First of all, how do people get their hands on the book, first of all, Jessica?
Through some of our wonderful independent bookshops like Books Upstairs, The Gutter Bookshop, and now recently Dobre Books have come on to help stock the book around the country. And if you need to buy it online, the wonderful Stinging Fly website, you can buy directly through them as well.
All right. And I think we should finish up with a piece of writing from the book. And this is the piece to which you responded, in fact. Can I actually ask you to read the poem to which you responded? Because I will explain that your response was that you went to hospital, you had a small freckle-like item on a part of your body. It was removed very quickly and you were in and out of the hospital in
yes,
no time.
Yeah.
It was a mini scar, disappeared.
Yes.
Now,
yeah.
I'm sorry to have kind of collapsed your poem into those few sentences.
Well, I'm glad that came across.
Yeah,
that's what I was going for.
But what really struck me was what you were responding to is a wholly different type of situation.
Yes, yeah. I'm going to read a poem called Scars by Nokukanya Dlamini, another wonderful mother in direct provision at the moment. Scars. They might be physical, they might be emotional, but they are scars. Not talking or showing them is my way of moving on. Revisiting those events and emotions is a torture I decided to bury. How many more times do I have to tell the buried scar for you to believe? I need to show no proof to show I have emotional scars, but it doesn't mean they are not there. Physical scars heal, sometimes they even leave no mark, but emotional scars are always raw. Anything touches them, they bleed. Their wound does not heal easily. Not seeing them doesn't mean they are not there. You learn to live with them. You learn ways of not touching and wounding them. You learn to move on and live happily with them. After all, they are scars.
That's Scars, a poem by Nokukanya Dlamini, read for us by Jessica Trainor. And it is in the anthology that we've been speaking about, Correspondences, an anthology to call for an end to direct provision, edited by Stephen Ray and Jessica Trainor. Thank you so much to Marwa Zamir and to Rehan Ali, who were on the line to us from Cork and Ballyhonus, respectively, and to Claire Hennessy and Jessica Trainor with us in studio here in Dublin. Congratulations, Sean, on giving these young gifted refugees so much airtime. They deserve it. That's my comment. They deserve it. That comes from KH and Arena. Really enjoying the show this evening, particularly the focus on direct provision, and they enjoyed the item on Harry Clark earlier as well. That is J, simply the text that we got there. Stingingfly.ie or .com, I'm sure, will get you the details on where to get Correspondences and the independent bookshops that Jessica Trainor mentioned to us as well.